All right, here we go on a Wednesday. It is Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Cody's still getting his wig on, his glasses on and everything for the Whittisons on Sunday. You good? You good over there?
Almost got it. Yeah. Just working through a couple of things. You know, it takes a little while to get into costume every day before the show. But as you said, this week we're going to support our guy Bobby Wood Jr. the entire time. So had to get my Whittisons stuff on if I was going to look the part. I see you're also wearing your Jack Caglione jersey.
Well, of course.
To support him.
You know? Come on now.
He did hit a blast.
Tonight was a great night for him. I understand he only had one hit, but that was a great night for him. The home run is what everybody focuses on. But
the
overall,
ninth inning at bat was
big. He had a strong at bat, and hopefully that takes some pressure off of him a little bit. I said yesterday, and I think we were discussing the offense, that the fact that now the big three are hitting for, what is it, six or seven games in a row now, that hopefully takes pressure off of him and allows him just to go out there and play some baseball. Because now the guys that you actually got to count on are playing some pretty darn good baseball.
That's what matters. I mean, obviously, last night, once again, just enough offense last night to get it going. But Cags hitting a homer when he didn't feel like he had to carry the offense. Lugo pitched well again, who we'll talk about here in just a little bit. But, yeah, lots to like right now. If the Royals wanted to win every game before our event on Sunday, then everybody can feel great going into the All-Star break. Royals keep winning every game. We launch the Whittisons when you can get your hair cut and do all this stuff on Sunday. It's going to be a great time. The Bobby Wood Jr. lookalike contest. I told you yesterday, mystery prizes. I think a little bit later on here, maybe about 15 minutes. Why don't we tell you what one of those prizes is? And I'm going to say, I think you're going to like it.
Yeah, it's going to be a nice little perk, to say the least, for the winner of the Bobby Wood Jr. lookalike contest. But last night, look, Nick Lofton, two games in a row, has been awesome for this team. Gets the walk-off hit yesterday. Cags, as we said, maybe has a breakthrough type of night, even if it was one hit. It wasn't like he went 3-for-3, 4-for-4, something like that. But the home run is first one at the K. To have the at-bat late, that moves Mikel over, that sets up Nick Lofton's walk-off hit for the Royals to now guarantee a series win. Now they're going for a sweep tonight against the Pirates. You know, all that is a great positive sign for your faith in whether or not the offense can keep up with what they've done for the last week or so. And that still is my number one thing. I said it yesterday. Like, I think, Cody, they have to do it for a full week or so before I'm going to be convinced that it's not just some flash in the pan or something like that.
I guess a lot of it comes down to this same thing, Gold, that we're running into a little bit, which is we know, and we've known this the entire time, I don't even need them to be the 1927 Yankees. They don't have to be the Bronx Bombers. Right? Four runs was enough last night. Four runs, a good chunk of this year, has been enough every time they've needed to win a game. I haven't done the math, but I'm going to guess that if they had scored four runs in every game, that they would be in a wild card spot and would have a winning record because of how many games they lost 2-1, 1-0, 3-2, or whatever else throughout the season. Four runs has traditionally been their magic number this year and ended up being their magic number last night. And yeah, Nick Lofton looks like the way that they've, this is where I feel like just as long as these guys don't get exposed, I actually don't hate the way they've used guys like Drew Waters or Nick Lofton in the sense that is if you need someone to come up and perform for a little bit or be part of a team that performs, well then great. Nick Lofton is a nice fit. He had a nice game. He's had a nice two games to help them get a couple of victories. I don't need them to rely on Nick Lofton every night. As you pointed out, that's still got to be Bobby, Vinny, and Salvi. But like, if they're just going to be parts of the puzzle, we're good. The problem is lately, over the last couple of years offensively, those guys have needed to be a bigger part of the equation, and then we run into those things. Honestly, it was nice to get the win after we got the news that Reagans isn't pitching for at least another month. We saw, I kind of thought Michael Massey was close to getting back, and instead they called up Cam Devaney, so maybe that's a little bit, maybe that's a post All-Star break thing for Michael Massey, because he's not doing rehab stuff, but he's also not on the roster. So like, he's kind of stuck in no man's land as it relates to kind of the injury stuff. So after a little bit of, I thought, negative news in the early part of the afternoon, maybe the Royals are going to get hot before the All-Star break, and we can start feeling, like you'd said, maybe they got back to 500. You could start buying back in, feeling like, okay, maybe the playoffs are still back in play.
Yeah, as far as Cole Reagans, you brought him up, so let's talk about Reagans for a second. I think yesterday we were mentioning the potential timeline for him, and it was like no earlier than August 1st or so. And then you look at the actual timeline, really no earlier than August 7th. And the 60-day, I think some people saw the 60-day IL and said, oh, this means he's for sure done for the season. That's not what that means. Now, if the team is out of it and it's the middle of August, they may choose to say, hey, we're just going to shut him down, Cody. But in terms of like the reaction I saw on multiple platforms yesterday, right when the news happened, Cole Reagans is done for the entire season now. That's not true.
The 60-day is, can be, yeah, you said retroactive.
It's already factored into it. He was not coming back before the first week or so of August anyway. So this just gives them some roster movement that they need to do on the 40-man and others to make this call-up yesterday for Cam Devaney actually work out.
I wonder whether or not, and yeah, I'm not going to get too hung up on that, but the Cole Reagans stuff, I mean, especially because they're signing Dallas Keuchel to minor league contract news that took place this morning. If you missed that, the Royals have signed Dallas Keuchel to that contract, as you mentioned.
But Dallas Keuchel and Rich Hill, one of them is pitching in the big leagues for the Royals this year. At some point, I mean, Keuchel's in AAA now. He's 37. Rich Hill's 44. I don't know, 45, whatever it is.
67. He might be a senior citizen.
I honestly
senior
think Winnison, we need to, like, maybe we can work on it. We need to do a spoof of like the Rookie Two, and it can happen in Kansas City. We can make a mini movie
because of all the aging players in AAA pitching for them.
Yes.
That's like Michael Fulmer and some other guys. If you were a former
What's
big league
Bartolo
pitcher
Colon doing?
Who is not currently, who's not currently in the big leagues, please come on down. You know, that side of it has at least been the case, but no, I want to buy back in. I do. I want to buy back in. I absolutely do. But like until they get back to 500 or within two games of a wild card spot, I'm hesitant. I'm hesitant because of the ground that they had put themselves in to make up. Now, I still know there's a lot of baseball games left. It's crazy that there's almost 70 still, which is so much baseball remaining. So, like, it's definitely never, and neither of us said it was just over. We were just no longer predicting that was going to be the case, which made us more in the selling camp, thought the team should be more in that mindset. But they also still have, 3 weeks to make that decision? And probably will take. My guess is they'll take pretty much all of that 3 weeks.
Well, because of how they're playing this week so far, and the last, you know, 6-7 games, you know, the idea that, like, they're going to make the big move now in terms of trading away somebody, I think that has been delayed. Like, you know, Seth Lugo, we're going to discuss, as you said, later on this hour and throughout the show. But if you're going to make a move to move on from him, now maybe you are waiting longer. And if you think by the end of this week, they somehow get back to 500.
It sounds like to me, you guys, and again, not that you lost hope in the season being, or the playoff chances being done, but it sounds to me like you don't want to be all the way in again just because you don't want to get heartbroken by the fact that you're all in. And if they don't make the playoffs, then you're fully disappointed again.
I want to see the offense have more than just a 7-day stretch. You know what I mean? Like that's the thing, because it's great how they're playing right now. And they're obviously fun to watch. And last night was great out of Kauffman Stadium. And who doesn't like when your hometown team is winning? But if the offense from Salvi, Vinny, and Bobby disappears again for 5 days, well, they're probably going like 1-4 during that stretch of games, or one, you know what I mean? Like, and all of a sudden they're back to being 5.5 out and 5 or 6 under 500. Like, it can quickly shift in the other direction again. So I want to, not that they got to go out and win 10 in a row, but I need to see, and this really will also include the first week after the All-Star break.
Yeah, I think
so.
Does
the offense also, let's say they stay hot heading into through Sunday, heading into the All-Star break. Then when they come back next Friday, are those guys hitting still? If they come out the rest of this week and the first series post All-Star break and the offense is what it's been here recently,
yeah,
then you will get me to start believing again that this team has a shot. But just because it's been a week of baseball where the offense has looked like what we thought they were going to look like earlier in the year, no, I'm not shifting back to now I suddenly think that everything is good.
I said the good news, at least, is that they used to have to jump 7 teams and now they only have to jump 3. But yeah, there's still 3 games below 500, and you and I still think 86, 87, 88 wins is going to be required in order to get into that final wild card spot. And the Mariners are still a good team. The Rays are still a good team. The Yankees are really far ahead of you, at least on the standing still. So, like, it just takes a lot still to, like, think that they're going to turn it around and solve all these problems. Do I think that this is closer? Do I think this team closer represents what I thought the Royals should and would be this year? Yes. 4-3. Specifically, that game last night is exactly who I thought the Royals were this year, or were going to be this year. A team who could get enough runs across to do it, run into some occasional power. Cags helping, obviously, that last night with 114-mile-per-hour screamer off the bat. Then good bullpen, good starting pitching, and a win. That's what I thought would get them to the 80-plus, you know, the 85-90 win mark this year, and get them competing for the division or get them competing for a wild card spot. Now we know that the Tigers are probably one of the three best teams in the entire sport this year, so maybe the division was always a bit of a long shot. I can let that one go, but it's why last night is kind of who I thought they should be all season long. And so that part of it at least played into my brain as far as when you're watching that game last night. For me at this point, I'm just kind of hoping that they win every single game going into the All-Star break. And then, like I said, we can all feel really, 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 really good about whether or not, or about where this team is heading. On the Chiefs side of things, I did hear over on Breakfast Ball, where our former coworker Danny Parkins works, Mark Schlereth talk a little bit about where the Chiefs are as it sits right now. And what stood out to me is he's saying something as a negative, and I'll play it for you. But I actually think it would be the ultimate positive if it's true.
I will say this, though. I think for the first time, and I'm a Bronco fan. You know,
of course you are.
I have the Denver in my blood. I think for the first time in a long time, I do a radio show in Denver. People feel like there was a time.
Like there's blood in the water?
Yeah, there was a time that Patrick Mahomes was the boogeyman, right? Like,
sure.
There's nothing we can do. But there feels like there's this league-wide sense that this is the first time in Kansas City, in his tenure at Kansas City, that they're vulnerable. Like that somebody else could
creep up and win this season.
Right, win this division. And we all picked it, I think, yesterday, right? I think you said the Chargers, I said the Chargers.
That wasn't that they would. It's like, who's most likely?
Most likely. Yeah. But before there was like, there was no most likely.
Right.
Kansas City's winning. It's most likely to come in second was the conversation we were having.
So it's like, well, they don't fear you the way they used to fear you. Honestly, please. Begging. I would love nothing more than for teams to actually feel that way. Be like, the Chiefs are good, but they're not that good. Please, go into every Chiefs game with that mindset instead of playing it like it's your Super Bowl, which is what we've seen every team do the last like 3 years. Ravens, Bills, Cincinnati, every divisional game has been treated like it's the biggest game on your schedule. If they want to start taking Kansas City less serious, I don't even take offense. Please, Schlereth, I hope that you're right.
Well, I just love it because it goes back to the entire national conversation we had the other day. Like, people are looking at one game last year, in the biggest game of the year, in fairness, and the ass kicking, and they're now thinking like that's just who the football team is going to be. Like, there's not any good anymore. The team that won 15 games, that has the same quarterback that's gone to three straight Super Bowls, the Hall of Fame head coach. A tight end that, while he might not be capable of having a 1,300-yard season, is still, in my opinion, very much capable of having a top five to top seven tight end season easily this upcoming year. The offensive line that, truly, like, it can't be worse than last year. It can't. I'm sorry. It can't. It's not going to be. I'm not saying that left tackle is going to be an all-pro, but it's not going to be worse than last year.
It could be equally as bad, but that's really,
fine,
like, the basement
fine.
Scenario.
Sure.
Yeah.
Fine, yeah. But like this idea that like teams don't fear him, it is wild. They don't fear him because of what? Because of the one game? Like that is insane to me.
Because their offense was maybe kind of mediocre last year.
Fine, but they still kicked everybody's ass
still
for the most
15
part. They won 15 games. And by the way, I do not care if they won by 1 point or 7. It does not matter. We go back to that whole conversation last year. They won 15 games. Chances are you were losing to that football team last year.
Does that mean you fear him though? And I'm not even trying to sympathize with him because I think he's wrong in the fact that like the Chiefs are winning the division this year. But I don't know if you can say that they're like, and again, you can just say it just to say it. But if you asked Bo Nix and Sean Payton, hey, are you afraid of the Chiefs at all? Absolutely not, is what they'll probably say.
Well, look, that's a stupid thing to say, if you're a player, by the way. You should just say yes.
But to me, if you're fearful of that.
I disagree with that.
It's cowardly.
If you are scared of the team, then you're not going to, you're never going to beat them. You've already lost. If you're fearful of a team, you've already lost.
I 100% agree. Yeah. Like, I don't think you ever, as a, whether you can respect an opponent, But I'm not expecting Bo Nix and Sean Payton to come out and say, yeah, we fear the heck out of Patrick Mahomes. We don't think we can beat him. Of course not. Nobody's saying they should be thinking that. But this idea of like, if the national narrative really is that, yeah, people just don't fear them anymore. I agree with you that, Cody, that's fine. Good. I think that goes back to what Patrick Mahomes said the other day with Kay Adams, which is like, yeah, we'll just let everybody do the talking and basically we're going to go out there and play. And I really think the first 2 weeks of the season are so massive for what we're hearing today. It'll either be that they're 1-1 and they don't look impressive, or 0-2 in some crazy scenario, because I just don't believe they're starting 0-2, or they're 2-0, they kick the Chargers' ass in Brazil, they come back home, and they get a little bit of revenge, if you will, after getting embarrassed last year in the Super Bowl, and they're 2-0, and people are like, oh, whoops, Patrick Mahomes kind of looks like the guy from 2 years ago, and Rashee Rice is healthy and on the field.
And we maybe slept on him a little bit, and that's a mistake.
That is not a crazy scenario, and then, as I said, people will shift back to it's rigged for the Chiefs again. So it's like, you either don't think they should be fearful of them, or the league wants them to win. Which one is it? And basically is what everybody nationally is choosing.
I mean, that's, you know, the text line made that joke. It said, did they win 15 games ago, or they handed 9 games because of the refs? Right. By the way, even if you believed, even if you were the real conspiracy person, you think that the refs help dictate choosing games, they'd never be so obvious to give you 9 of them, you know? Maybe 1 or 2, or maybe in the playoffs. In which case, by the way, they won 18 games last year, not 15. So either they handed him 9 of them, that's only half. So to win the other 9, which is more than half of the league won, that's the same number of games Cincinnati won last year. So like, whether the league handled, isn't that crazy? The Chiefs won twice as many football games in the calendar last year in the NFL season as the Cincinnati Bengals.
All right, relax.
So
relax.
Okay, fine. I could have said a lot of teams, but I would have had to said like quadruple or triple for the bad teams, you know? A slightly different argument. It's much harder to do.
Well, I think the whole fearful thing is interesting because, correct me if I'm wrong, has Lamar Jackson beat Mahomes? How many times has Lamar Jackson beat Patrick Mahomes?
A couple times. Beat him in the regular season when Al got mooned by Ravens fans. That one stands out.
Yeah, I saw that one in person.
One time?
Yeah.
So that was for sure.
Because he came out and said,
probably.
Because he came out and said,
I think just once.
I thought it was back-to-back regular seasons.
Because he's come out and said, he's the boogeyman. He's my kryptonite.
Right. And he still beat him. And you can be honest. Maybe it's behind closed doors, Drew, but I do think sometimes fear is an appropriate response. Maybe not to say publicly, but when you sit in a room, you should be like, man, that guy's scary as hell. I don't think there's anything wrong with saying that. I think you've lost the mental battle because you admit somebody is a terrifying player.
Yeah, but to me, I don't think, if you really feel that he's your kryptonite, then you've already spoken into existence what essentially is going to happen, you know, because you're already Look, giving yourself that narrative. Once. You're painting that picture where you're going to feel that way once you start the game. Man, this guy actually is really good. I was right. I don't know if we're going to be able to do, and all these things just start popping in your head. Where if you hear the Chiefs, your ears should perk up a little bit. You should know that they're coming. You should prepare more for the Chiefs than anybody else. That doesn't mean that you should be worried that you're going to lose.
Yeah, I hear you. I would say though, their play will, and how they coach will tell us a lot of this too. I mean, if their teams are back to early in the year, not fearful, so therefore they're not as aggressive, they're not going for the fourth downs because they feel like they have to keep up. If that shifts in the other direction, then that'll tell us they're not fearful. That also could be a massive mistake by these football teams if that's how they approach it.
I think if you limited this to just the offense, I don't think people last year feared the Chiefs offense the way they used to. I do think that when the offense came into town, they're like, okay, like we've got some methods to slow this down. They're not going to go and put 30 on us. And we better put, like you said, Gold, go for every fourth down, put 30 on them. There might be part of that where teams are still like, are you going to be that scary of an offense again? We'll see. But again, I hope that they do that because the last 2 years, and we don't have to excuse me, because if it happens a third year in a row and everyone's healthy, well, then there's just a fundamental problem that they're not getting enough out of their quarterback. They're not getting enough out of Andy Reid's offense. They're not getting enough out of Nagy, whoever, not getting enough out of their wide receivers or running backs. There's just a fundamental flaw because the last 2 years are easy. The first year is they had no talent. Their number one wide receiver going into the year was Kadarius Toney. Then last year, it was the wrath of injuries. But I don't really care what happens this year. If you go 3 years in a row of kind of a mediocre offense with Andy Reid and Patrick Mahomes, well, then the excuse game is done. And the reasons for why the offense was are done. And you just need to look internally for what is causing the offense to stall out in the way that it did. If you limit it to the offense, teams might actually have a point over the last 2 years. But I'm the same as you. If you sleep on them, if you decide not to do that, well, then I think you might run into an issue where you might make a mistake by sleeping on them. You know, you're not paying enough attention to what happened the last 2 years.
I love all this stuff, though. I do.
I
think it's great. I think it's.
I like the hate.
I think it's terrific, and it's one of those that very, very quickly people can look like complete idiots. So I also enjoy that. Very quickly in the beginning of the season.
I do like how quickly, yeah, you're right. You prove people wrong so fast. Like the Chiefs, there were teams, people last year, Chiefs won't even win the division, won't even make the play. Won 15 games with the number one seed, won the whole AFC again. And then, yeah, came up short in a game. But it's just like, you know things have gotten bad when the biggest dunk you have on someone is, well, you made it way further than us. We even thought about getting. You lost in that last game, the only last game you could play. Like, oh, man, you got us. Oh, man, yeah, what a burn.
It is crazy.
Sick burn. You got me because the Chiefs lost in the Super Bowl, their third consecutive appearance in the game, the two previous of which they won.
It's weird how conversations go in sports, especially on like the national debate talking head show stuff. You know, it's gotten to the point where you're right. The Chiefs could have lost by a field goal in the AFC title game. In a weird way, people would have talked about them in a different way than if by making the Super Bowl and getting your ass kicked. It's like losing on a last second field goal in the AFC title game, that would have been more impressive. What?
Doesn't make any sense. If for some reason this is the first time you're turning into the video stream and you're seeing Alex and I once again dressed in crowns and senior Wittizen buttons and sunglasses, you got the wigs on.
I do. You thought this was my real hair?
Maybe let it grow out a little bit. You've positioned it well where you just kind of look like you do look like you're getting ready to hit the slopes before you
skiing. Yeah.
Before you like hit the vape pin. Like that's what it looks like right before.
I don't know why my wig
it kind of flares out a little bit more than mine. Did you curl it?
No, I didn't do anything. I don't know what's up with it, man.
But if you're like, why are they dressed like that? We'll continue to tell you that we have started a movement to get Bobby Wood Jr. more attention because, for starters, he's not a starter in the All-Star game and it's offensive. We've dubbed them the Wittizens. We are the senior Wittizens, the two people who are trying to get this ball rolling. So on Sunday, we do our event outside of Gate B at Kauffman Stadium, where you can get a free Bobby Witt Jr. haircut. You don't have to get it, but then you also have the option to compete in our Bobby Witt Jr. lookalike contest. I have been teasing mystery prizes to go with it, but Goldwell, we are happy to announce what one of those prizes will be. Would you like to tell the fine people what the winner of the Bobby Witt Jr. lookalike contest will get to do with this show? With the two of us on Sunday.
The winner will be getting to sit in those Crown Club seats on Sunday as the Royals take on the Mets. So, on TV, I'm told in view of TV as well. So, for you and a guest, if you win the contest, will be sitting with us in Crown Club on Sunday. That's one of the prizes.
And I got to say, as somebody who's sat in Crown Club before, the perks of just Crown Club alone are worth it. Let alone the fact he'll be on TV looking like Bobby Witt Jr. as an official Wittizen, right? All the things that come with all the perks that come with that. Plus, you get all the food and drink down there. Lovely scenario, I think, for the winner. You can take advantage of that yourself. You're going to get down there and get some prime rib.
Of course. Imagine eating prime rib wearing a crown and a wig and glasses.
We're going to get a few looks. Do you think we have to take these off to block
the view? We can't block the view of people behind us. I don't know.
I mean, these aren't that high, right? They can see around us. They stagger those seats a little bit.
You might want to take it off after a while. We'll see.
Not until we're on camera.
Yeah.
Not until they see us at least for a little bit dressed like this so that people are aware of the Wittizens. So if you want to dress up or willing to be in a Bobby Witt Jr. lookalike contest, Sunday's your day. The haircuts start at 10:30. The lookalike contest will start a little after noon. We will be out there handing out the stuff, you know, the swag we showed you yesterday, the stickers that say Wittizen, the buttons that like we have on our shirts, eye black that say Wittizen. All that stuff will start at 10:30. But you have a chance to sit with us in Crown Club. We're thinking like, I think we should book in them. We should put them in the middle and then you and I on the outside. We talk to each other enough. Yeah. We don't have to talk to each other during the game.
Yeah, that works for me, man. Going to be a fun one on Sunday out at Kauffman Stadium. All right, coming up next, though, let's keep talking about the Royals a little bit and something that has shifted schedule-wise from a couple weeks ago and one person that may not have to worry about something before the start of the season. That's coming up. Coming up in about 8 minutes, we'll talk some Chiefs football, including an update on one player's situation off-season-wise and how it looks clearer and clearer, perhaps, for the start of this regular season. You guys can hit us up on the Jay Southland Tow Service text line, 913-586-7965. Video stream up and running as well. Make sure you subscribe to YouTube in particular. That way you don't miss any of the shows here on 96.5 The Fan. So a while back, we had talked about the Royals schedule-wise. Like, man, you know, the uphill climb, it's a climb in numbers game, but also schedule-wise.
Because they had one of the five hardest schedules remaining in all of baseball when we brought it up.
They did, like middle to late June. It was the top five toughest schedule. Well, because the American League Central has cooled off. Teams like the Guardians have lost. I don't know if they still have lost 10 in a row. I don't know if they finally won, but they had lost 10 in a row. So now you take a peek. One positive, I guess, if you're trying to factor in how to approach the next few weeks, too, in trades and everything. You know, the Royals now have the 21st toughest or 9th easiest schedule remaining in baseball. It's because they have six, yes, against the Tigers, the toughest team in baseball. But now if you go and you look on the easier side of it, they have six against the White Sox, three against the Nationals.
Who've been bad.
Three against the A's, and I understand the A's swept the Royals.
But they still
I get
are bad.
It. Pirates, who...
we're watching right now.
Right now they got one game left with them. And then they have a couple against the Braves, who have been a massive disappointment this year. And then the Marlins. So the schedule has lightened up a little bit. Before, you would have had a team like the Twins maybe even on the side of being tough based on strength of schedule. And I understand it's baseball. Anybody can beat anybody. But we're just talking from a strength of schedule perspective. That is eased up compared to what it was.
A lot of this matters for the teams that you're going to face in there. And yeah, this does matter a lot, Gold, because when they started going through that thick part of their schedule, that's when the losing started. They are still struggling more against really good baseball teams than against bad baseball teams, which is not uncommon for a lot of people. But in the bottom 10 is just pretty much the entire division. The 26th hardest for the Twins, 27th hardest for the Tigers, the easiest schedule remaining in all of baseball at the hands of the Guardians, who aren't winning at all. But think about the teams you're going to have to pass. Those are the ones they're going to have to play a more difficult schedule than you. And that's what matters more than the rest of it. Yeah, sure, Seattle's kind of probably in your range. But the idea that it's softened up a little bit is what should, I think, give the Royals a little bit more internal optimism than what we're talking about, right? So if you've got that kind of schedule lined up with that, I'm looking at the difficult part of their schedule. It's not that bad either. The Mets, who are pretty good, are coming into town this weekend. But when you start looking at it, honestly, this is one of the things that kind of reassures me a little bit that maybe they can crawl back into this thing versus where they've been before. Because it was no longer than like 4 days, Gold, after we're like, Royals are facing their toughest 2 weeks of the entire season and have one of the toughest schedules remaining in baseball. And it went bad. It went real bad. And since that moment, their schedule has softened significantly. I'll just be honest. Twins aren't very good. Guardians aren't very good. And I'm sure they're saying the same thing about the Royals right now. But I still think the Royals' core is better than either of those teams. And more importantly, their pitching is better than either of those teams. I know we can talk more about Seth Lugo and Dallas Keuchel coming up here in about 50 or 20 minutes or so. But as you look at those teams, them being bad is great news for the Royals. I hope the Central falls off. It sucked when they were all good.
Yeah, look, all you can ask for at this point is, like, you know, can you beat up on bad teams and keep the bad teams down and losing teams losing and that kind of thing. And as you were saying, like, the Royals have not always done that this year. The A's swept them, and this is a Pirates team that, you know, offensively is right there with the Royals and how bad they are.
They did not score a run over the weekend.
This is what you have to do, but you're going to, yes, have to beat some high quality teams along the way. We were doing the math on this the other day. Like, you can't just the rest of the way beat up on the bad teams and be below 500 by a couple games against the world. Like, you will not make up the ground. Like, you're going to have, I'm not saying they got six games against the Tigers left. Okay.
3-3.
You'll
is
take
fine.
3-3. Yeah. I mean,
you're not trying
team.
To catch them in the division. But you're trying not to lose more.
But ground. When I see you got six against the White Sox, can you go 5-1 or 4-2, Cody, against the White Sox? You got three against the Nationals. Got to win that series. Then you know, you've got series against, as you said, the Mets this weekend. You can't get swept by the New York Mets. You know, stuff like that. You got the Mariners still for three more. Can't get swept.
That's
you
the team fight. You're chasing still,
you know,
actively.
And you already didn't perform well, you know, against them in Seattle. So overall, like, you know, to the extent that I thought they need to, they even the series, I thought they needed to win 3 or 4. So
yeah, I do really do. I do think, yeah, they went 2-2. They didn't like.
Yeah,
they didn't perform poorly. They didn't lose ground to Seattle, but because they were behind Seattle, at some point they're going to actually. It's not even that they have to; it's that they can. the importance of the team who is directly ahead of you is on your schedule, so you can just make up, not a half game, not play even, game for game. You beat them in a three-game sweep, and you were four games back. You are now only one game back. You know, you have a chance to catch up all the ground that you are missing on a team directly ahead of you. Those become more and more and more important. But yeah, I'll be honest. I looked it up because you had brought it up before on the schedule. I'm like, you know, how hard is the schedule remaining? And I was like, not bad. You know what? It was kind of encouraging for me. I'm looking for reasons to be optimistic about the Royals. I'm always looking for reasons to be optimistic because it's easy to look in the negative or, I don't know, get TMZ headlines because you think someone's overweight. I don't need that in my life if I can avoid it, which kind of brings me to the Chiefs a little bit. This isn't even like an optimism or anything outside of this. I'm just doing some math. Based on when the civil trial is set to take place for Rashee Rice and the fact that there is no date for the criminal trial, I am now officially 99.9% convinced that Rashee Rice is not getting suspended this year. Maybe not at all, but show me a world in which all of a sudden now he's getting suspended. Does he enter an agreement with the state over his criminal trial? I haven't even heard that they've technically charged him yet for that stuff. So, like, at this point, why am I supposed to think 2 weeks from the opening of training camp that Rashee Rice has any chance of missing any games this year? This year. I'm going to point out this year, which would be stupid, by the way. How ludicrous would it be that he misses four games in the year 2026 for something that happened 3 years ago? Football is stuck in a bad spot because they didn't want to punish people before the legal process took place after they screwed that up a different time. But now they're finding out that really expensive players have really good lawyers and can drag out legal proceedings for an impossibly long amount of time. I don't think Rashee Rice is getting suspended this year.
So I don't think so either. I'm not at 99% like you.
Like 70% where you're at.
Hard to predict the legal system and how that could play out. I'm probably in the 70s. Yeah, I probably think there's like a 70% chance that he doesn't get suspended this year. I'll stick with the same timeline as last year. I remember we were going up to training camp and we were discussing this very thing. And I think the NFL usually does this, but also I think if you can't make your decision, the league that is, by August 15th or so, then you cannot suspend somebody from a prior incident for that season. It should have to roll over to the next year, you know, unless there's a new incident that comes to light or something like that. It's different. But when it's an incident that already occurred in this case, or it'll be, you know, it's well over a year by the time we get to August, and you're waiting for the criminal proceedings to wrap up or begin, I guess, if you can't make that suspension determination by the end of training camp, then you got to push to the next year. And that'll irritate fans across the league, and they'll think it's set up and rigged for the Chiefs and yada, yada, yada.
But they've just decided
to
win.
But if there was
the
a wide
process.
Receiver on the Buffalo Bills or the Baltimore Ravens that had a same scenario play out and the criminal case hadn't begun or whatever, they also would not be getting suspended yet at this point. And so for the Chiefs' sake, obviously, yeah, no doubt it's a great thing for them that it looks more and more like he's going to be available, because by the time that suspension ever happens, I also now think it's going to be for far fewer games than what we all thought initially. And again, I'm just telling you what we think is going to happen. I know, you know, we get texts whenever we talk about this. They're like, you're saying he shouldn't be held responsible. That's not what we're saying.
I'm just telling you what I think is
going to
happen.
What we think is going to happen in the way this is getting dragged out longer and longer. And yeah, unfortunately, the level of you know, attention to it gets less and less every year it goes by or every month it goes by.
Yeah, and that's just part of the way. And I think the league kind of likes it that way sometimes, too. They don't want their players in trouble to go with it. And yeah, I am just predicting what I think will occur at this point. I don't think he's getting suspended this year. And yeah, I've already told you, maybe like 2 months ago, I already told you that I thought I've softened what I think the total punishment will be for Rashee Rice down to 2 to 4 games instead of 4 to 8 or whatever I thought it was probably before. I do think it's somewhere in that lower number. For his sake, this is the part that I can't get over. It's like, you can delay it, right, as long as you want. But for his sake, a guy who eventually will want to get a long-term contract with either the Chiefs or another team, is it better to just get the suspension out of the way, put up massive numbers the rest of the year, the final year of your rookie deal, put up massive numbers again, and then force teams into a decision and just get it out of the way? Because right now, his seasons are weird. Good, solid rookie year. Not like he had 1,400 yards, but a nice rookie year out of Rashee Rice. An excellent 4 games before he got hurt. Would it be worse to be suspended the first, let's just call it, 4 games this year and have a kick-ass 13 behind it, or crush it for 17 games this year, miss 4 more the following year, and then put up the numbers? I feel like, in a way, if I were him, I'd want the most consecutive time in a row being a great wide receiver to get paid. I feel like I would want the suspension out of the way. Can you request that if you're a player? Hey, if you're going to suspend me, can I just take it now? Because that part of it always confuses me. I feel like I would rather get it out of the way if I were a player now in Rashee Rice's spot. But because of the season-long injury, I wonder if he'd rather just get back on the field first, if given his own choice. Let's just say he knows he's going to get suspended.
He's on the first four this year or next year. You're on a rookie contract. You're not asking for a suspension. You're on a rookie contract. I'm just saying
if you know for a fact you're getting four games, would you rather this year or next year? I mean, you got to pay lawyers, so maybe next year, but...
Yeah, I think you always push it back as long as possible. I don't think you get it out of the way if you're on your rookie contract still. You also think if you're him, you think there's a chance you still don't get suspended at all.
Somebody says, isn't Justin Tucker already suspended? Yes, but those are... It's just a different scenario. What we're talking about is a traffic violation versus... They treat him different, I guess, is what I would say.
This is where it gets complicated, though, for the NFL, because you're trying to weigh like the getting the morality kind of thing within it, right? You know, it's like, you know, you weigh like what's more serious of an offense, and it gets really dirty and ugly when you start weighing like one incident that obviously still altered some people's lives in a car accident,
yep,
versus also domestic violence or sexual assault allegations, like, and you're weighing like what is worse, and you play this moral game, and it gets really ugly and nasty, you know, and kind of gross if you play that. But yes, the NFL did suspend Justin Tucker. That is true.
And they already had the direct comp. They're just like, he did the same thing as Deshaun Watson. You get the Deshaun Watson suspension.
How many
the
games
second
was
they
it?
Agreed so, to that.
10? Is that what he got suspended? Tucker.
Yeah, 10 games. And he's a free agent. He can serve the suspension while he's a free agent. But he's also a kicker. If you're a team, why would you even take a chance on him anymore? Like, you'd probably just be done.
I would think so. Well, teams are desperate. I
think he'll get signed.
They took Michael Vick out of jail.
He's a kicker, and he wasn't even kicking that well last year.
I think somebody will sign him.
I've seen teams take some.
Like the sad reality of it is practice players. I know the reality says we say guy? Is like, hey, you know, if you can play, you're going to get an opportunity. But also, we're talking about a kicker, and you may think it's gross, but there is a difference for some teams to stomach. Somebody getting in a car accident that may have injured people, and what Justin Tucker is accused of doing, and what the PR looks like for that versus a car accident. The details are worse for one from a PR perspective.
And the car part of it always changes the how if you're the league, this is why it's so tough. If you're the league, right? Other players. So they've had other players get busted going. For instance, didn't Stephon Diggs just get busted going like 110 miles an hour?
I don't know.
I don't know. There was a recent NFL player.
Well, Shador Sanders.
That's what it was. I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. I didn't mean not. Diggs got in trouble for mystery substances on a boat. He got publicly criticized.
Yeah, he hadn't been in trouble for that at all. Someone just saw a video.
No, I didn't mean trouble. I just meant like public trouble. Not like.
Yeah, by the way, text line, that is incorrect. Someone says Tucker's suspension doesn't start till he gets signed by another team. That is false.
Came out
is actually starting week one, whether he's signed by anybody or not. But anyway.
But so, like. Like, so let's say you're Shadur and you go 110 miles an hour, but you don't get in an accident. But you're Rashee Rice and you're driving also really fast, but you get in an accident. Do you suspend a player for just doing the reckless behavior, or when the reckless behavior becomes hurtful to other people? You know, it's not the league. It seems simpler on surface, but I imagine if you're sitting in those meetings trying to decide on suspensions and all this stuff and precedent, because you're setting a precedent for anybody after this, before this, anything that occurs after this, you're kind of pretty much saying, because that was the whole Deshaun thing. People thought he should have gotten more. He wanted a lot less. They settled on 10 games. The next time something similar came up to that, they gave that next player, Justin Tucker, a similar length suspension as the one Deshaun Watson gets. So whatever they give Rashee Rice has got to be the number they think is fair for anybody who gets in a traffic-related accident in which it was their fault. And if he was going 80 in a 60 instead of 120, is it the same suspension? It's a really difficult place for the NFL to be in. All of them are bad, and you shouldn't do it. No one's arguing that. I don't think he's getting suspended this year. That's all.
That must mean you don't think he should be in trouble at all, Cody.
I'm sure that's what somebody will take this.
Oh, we already got that text.
Like you said, it's the moral and Wayne, the moral stuff where somebody texted and he was almost Henry Ruggs, where the line is very thin in terms of if thank God nobody got hurt. If somebody gets hurt or worse, Rashee, he's not even worried about getting suspended. He's never playing. He's never playing again. Like I think that's
the message that his people around him and the chief should be saying is how fortunate you are that you didn't kill somebody.
Yeah.
Obviously that's, but we know why the consequence is different. Like that's just, I mean, that's just how, like, because that fortunately did not happen.
Correct.
He's of course not going to be held to the same standard, but that's the message that hopefully has got across to him.
Yeah.
That, hey, this could have been, you could have killed yourself. You could have killed somebody else. You, somebody,
yeah, you hope you learn a very valuable, important lesson.
Right.
Sure.
For sure.
Of course, I, you know, no reason to not think that that would be the case. Somebody's now asking if the Browns need a kicker. That's can you give them a fully guaranteed contract?
Oh boy,
is that what you do? You know, in that scenario as well. Really, get
coming up in about 15 minutes, we'll talk more about the Royals. What Vern had to say yesterday in regards to Seth Lugo possibly being traded. But I don't know if you guys saw on social media today, the Washington Commanders put out some new alternate, really they're retro, not alternate, but retro uniforms.
Yeah.
Going back to what they're calling their Super Bowl era uniforms. They're the classic, at the time, Washington Redskins uniforms that we all saw growing up watching them play. And you think it's really, really interesting. Well, I just think the uniforms are kind of cool looking. They're, by the way, not doing the Redskin logo. They're just doing everything but that. But
everything but that. But here's
probably a smart
decision. I want to know if I'm alone, because I'm worried that, like, sometimes you have an opinion and then you're like, better take this one. We're lucky enough to have a platform. We can take it to the masses. I want to know if I'm alone in thinking this. 913-586-7965 or YouTube, Twitter, Twitch, Facebook. We'll take all of your responses over there. I think that this is a deliberate attempt from Josh Harris to soft launch bringing back the old Washington name. I think he knows his fans want it. I think he's interested in bringing it back. And because the climate, I think, nationally has changed some in the time since that has occurred, I think he's soft launching bringing back the name, and he wants to know if people could stomach it. So he's going to do everything but that first. Here's all the uniforms. They're doing it for 3 games. Here we'll celebrate all the old guard. And just like, hypothetically, how would you feel, you know, if we brought the old name back? Anybody? Problems? I think it's a soft launch. I think he wants to bring the old name back, and he thinks maybe he can get away with it, and this is his way of like testing the waters from a marketing end.
Well, I agree on one thing, which is in 2025, it is much more likely that he brings the name back than it was a couple years ago. That's just the reality, as you said, with the climate that the United States exists in currently and maybe moving forward, right? Like, I think there's just a different acceptance of certain things. That's all a different conversation. But in terms of the look of the uniform, I mean, the uniforms look awesome. Yes, their fans want the old logo and everything back. The fact that they're winning football games also helps with this. That owner right now, and Josh Harris, that ownership group, they're like, because of how bad Dan Snyder was, they're like the most beloved ownership group in the NFL right now. I mean, their fans, everything this guy does right now has been great.
Their
owner before sucked. You know, they have a franchise quarterback now. I think this today, Cody, is more about the stadium. So they are trying to move back to the old.
I saw the song that said for the old DC. That felt like, would you like to be
that's
the old
part
name
of their,
again?
They have like a fight song or whatever. That's part of their fight song. But then also, they are trying to move back to the old RFK site, RFK Stadium site. And they want to go back to DC. And this, I think, is part of that movement as well. They also, much like we've been talking here about the stadium and the financial stuff, they're trying to get the funding mechanisms in place and the right people aligned to make that happen. They want to go back to DC. They're also only wearing these uniforms, which I think is a mistake, only for 3 games. They should just wear these for every single road game or home game or whatever. They're that good.
It can't be that hard to just go back to that style of uniform, but change the name from Commanders to something that is different, but also represents. Because I think Commanders is fine. I think there's better options.
They don't
want
to go through a whole nother rebrand. So we're going back to
leave it at Commanders at this point, if that's the case.
This is why I think it's a soft launch. If you're trying to go back and be like, hey, look, we're doing the throwbacks, but we're not totally sure people will let us do the all the way throwbacks yet. So here's most of it. How are we stomaching this? What's the public reaction? I think that their teams are on social media monitoring the like, eh, because I don't think I'm like the only person to be like, I can see what you're up to here, because obviously they just did the Washington Commanders logo on the helmet and tried to make it kind of the older style. Yeah. The older style colored uniforms and all that stuff. Yeah. I think they look good in the like color scheme or stripe department, but I don't think you should go back to the old name. Like, I think that one should stay dead and buried. You decided to move on from it. Move on from it. I don't think it was the wrong choice at the time. I think it was the right choice. Just stay away from it. But I feel like it's a little bit of a like, yeah, can we, if we tried, would you guys care? And yeah, some of it goes back to what I said, where I just think the national sentiment on it won't be as harsh as it was even then.
For sure.
Have we ever seen that other than, I guess, the Charlotte Bobcats go back to the Charlotte Hornets? Have we ever seen that in sports where they left a team name behind and then went back to it again?
Hornets, you mentioned them, right?
Well, yeah, other than the Hornets, is there any? There's no other example of that actually happening.
I mean, most people don't change their team name.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, we've had teams that, like, move.
I mean, I've watched the Nashville team throw on an Oilers jersey once, but, like, I don't think they're going to just start calling themselves that. Now, they're also in a different city, but, like, I don't think the Texans will ever just be like, we're not the Texans anymore, we're the Oilers now.
They should be, by the way.
Oh, yeah, way cooler name. But I don't think they do it. That's the thing.
They should be the Houston Oilers.
But unlike the scenarios that we're mentioning, although I guess that one's the case, like you said, the citywide sentiment, and you've talked to, like, your co-host who you do the betting show with on Saturday, works in D.C., the fans, they would have no pushback in the city. By all accounts, everybody in D.C. would be like, we're back!
Yeah, I've told you that whenever I go on that station in D.C., and this year, by the way, the Commanders play here, so I think we're going to do some stuff with that station and maybe have some of their guys on our show and vice versa, that game heading at Monday Night Football game at Arrowhead, that they, what really drives them crazy is that, and I'm not saying they're right or wrong, but they don't get why we in Kansas City get to still do, like, the tomahawk chop.
Although technically the Chiefs don't endorse that,
I understand,
anymore.
But everybody does it at the game. And all this kind of stuff, and they don't. Like, they're basically just jealous. they're jealous. Like, why did we get reprimanded and you guys didn't? Now, I would also say the name Chiefs is not anywhere near the name Redskins.
And it wasn't
whatsoever.
Chief Wahoo or the, like, using
so
a person
it's
as
to
a,
me completely different. I really think it's completely different. I truly
I do.
But that's the sentiment in D.C., and I promise you
maybe not in the chat.
That the week of that game, heading into that Monday night game, somebody will have an article somewhere on a national publication about this very thing and why they're doing this and they're not, yada, yada. Like, just be ready. That is happening. And was it in October? End of October when the Commanders come to Kansas City?
Yeah. Somebody says maybe, is one of the games they're doing it against the Chiefs?
No, would it's not. I already looked.
Little it's, too on the nose there. You can't be that up front with it.
No, it's like three primetime games, but not the Chiefs primetime game.
I think they're all later in the year. It feels like they're like November or later or something, if I remember the calendar right. Maybe not. Oh, you know, maybe they weren't on their opener too. I can't remember now, but you can see the dates. Adam Schefter had sent out the thing. I feel like it's a soft launch. I think that they're just trying to get a feel, and I don't think they do it this year. I think they're just trying to get a feel of the vibe.
Yeah, I think
if we tried to soften our way back into this thing, how would everyone feel?
Yeah, I think a lot's connected to the stadium thing, too. I think don't discount that just because they want to go back to D.C. and their roots from a stadium perspective as well.
Playing the string on the old jerseys helps.
Yeah. And look, maybe they do both at the same time. Maybe, like, whatever that day is that they eventually get their stadium figured out, maybe that's when they decide to try to make a switch back or something. I don't know. But something to follow. I do think they look cool, the ones they released today, though, that they're going to wear this upcoming season. All right, up next, let's get right back into the Royals. Something Vern had to say yesterday about Seth Lugo and what the Royals will be doing when it comes to that. And then the Big 12 Media Days, believe it or not, that's actually going on down in Texas right now. And Brett Yormark is doubling down on something that the Big 10 and the SEC don't like, but the Big 12 does.